It has changed some things, yeah. It's been, I wouldn't say it's been sort of completely revolutionary. Sort of the way we work has stayed pretty much the same. But there are portions of that workflow which have been made easier. It's exactly that, yeah. It's tying it back to that. It's talking to people who have some problem they're trying to solve, and you're demonstrating that this is the solution to that problem. And the best way to connect to that isn't necessarily showing the solution in a great deal of detail. Or if you're doing some sort of animation, if you're trying to demonstrate that, you need to be flexible with making it accurate.
So, first question, how do you approach simplifying complex scientific concepts for a general audience in video content?
So, video can be a really powerful medium for doing this because it's visual. You know, you can talk to the audience in more ways than just, you know, the words you're using in the script. If you're trying to describe something in audio or make people read text, concepts that are you know, a little beyond what they already understand, or you know, complicated to get across, can just be daunting and off-putting, and people need to like invest quite a lot of effort to get past them. But video, I think, more than any other medium, has, you know, the capability to sort of get things across in a way that's easy to understand, because people sort of just find it easier to engage with. You know, whether it's an animated video where you can break down concepts and make them, you know, sort of, you know, physically show what's happening in quite a simplified way, or even if it's just people talking, you know, watching, listening to a conversation or listening to an interview, people are more likely to engage with that than they are to, you know, with something where it's where they've got to sort of read through text, or, you know, sort of commit to understanding it themselves. So often, you know, the best way to get across a concept is just that, you know, to have an interview with someone who understands the concept really well, who is invested in it, and just sort of tell a human story around it and have people connect to that, rather than having to, you know, feel like it's anything technical. If you just tell a story and have the technical concepts be explained along the way in order for it to make sense, people won't even realize that they're absorbing technical content a lot of the time.
So how do you determine the level of detail to include in video?
That really depends on the audience a lot. You know, if with the stuff we do, we're making content for a scientific and technical audience anyway, so you can often go actually quite deep into the technical concepts, into the technical side of things, and still have it make sense. But you wouldn't necessarily use that video or that that content for every single occasion. So that's really one of the first things we understand when we're starting out on a project is, who is this for? You know, that's something that's really important to nail down upfront. Are you talking to a more general audience, whether it's, you know, scientific generalists or people in the industry, but who aren't, you know, super familiar, or even just the general public? Or are you talking to people who are already somewhat knowledgeable, they're already engaged with the topic, and they want to hear more of the detail? And that really governs to a large extent how deep you go, you know, how technical you go into the weeds of the science of it, and what kind of language and what kind of framing you need to use for it as well.
So you've also kind of answered this, but how do you choose the most appropriate visual aids and animation to include in the video? Can you also share some tools you use?
Yeah, so again, that, you know, it depends on the level of understanding that you're assuming the audience already has. Sometimes it can be best to just strip things right back to a really basic thing, or use abstract sort of visuals where, you know, you don't necessarily need to describe or depict exactly what's happening. You're just trying to get across the concept of what's going on enough so that people can follow along with the story. I think where that can get difficult is when you're working with scientists and, you know, product managers who are, you know, really proud of their technical the technical capabilities of their product. There's a balance there where you need to try and abstract things and simplify things enough that they become understandable to the audience that you want. But it still needs to actually reflect what's going on. And that's probably the trickiest balance to get right. There's no real big secret answer to that. It's often just about trial and error and just sort of, and talking and just trying to understand, you know, what's important to the specialists that you're working with about the concept or about the product, like what is it they really don't want to lose? And then just trying out different things and figuring out a way to get that across without it being a full, you know, 3D cross-section of the whole product, which is, you know, for most audiences, that's just going to be more confusing than anything else.
Okay, it's all about finding the compromise.
Yeah, and in terms of tools, there's not really anything particularly special. It's, you know, as I say, it's a trial and error process, really. The tools we use are, you know, the same design tools you'd use for anything else. You know, it's Illustrator and After Effects for the animated videos. And it's, you know, we use Premiere for the live video stuff.
Mm-hmm. Milan, you've also mentioned working with scientists, working with clients. So can you share examples of how you've effectively used these storytelling techniques to explain complex topics?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of recent examples where we're trying to show the benefits of a particular product. And it's the product itself is quite technical to explain the real details of what's going on, or what, you know, people might not necessarily need to know all of that to know why the product's good. And if there's nothing particularly visually appealing about the product itself, you know, whether it's either, you know, a fairly low profile sort of small product, or in some cases, even chemicals, you know, chemical products, or people are, you know, selling particular types of chemicals, obviously visually there's not a lot you can do there beyond showing the structure of the molecule that, you know, doesn't mean that much to people who don't already know what it is. And in those cases, the best way to show them off usually is to show them in context. So that's what we'll always try and do, is say, right, you know, who is going to be using it? What's it going to be used for? Is it going to go into another product? If it's a chemical, what are you using it to make? What's the end product it's going to end up in? Or be used to make, if it's something like a sensor or a spectrometer or something that, you know, something that's being used in a lab, or it's being used in a, like a process manufacturing environment, or whatever it might be. Let's show that environment almost, you know, that's more important to get right almost than the product itself, because then you're showing what solutions the product can offer, you know, what problems the product can solve for the end user, rather than focusing too much on the product itself, because it's the function that people are after rather than the sort of visuals of the product.
Yeah. We in marketing usually find that the story that works the best is you have a problem, we have a solution.
Exactly.
So if you put it in video, even more powerful.
It's exactly that. Yeah. It's tying it back to that. It's talking to people who have some problem they're trying to solve, and you're demonstrating that this is the solution to that problem. And the best way to connect to that isn't necessarily showing the solution in a great deal of detail. It's more about showing them a scenario, you know, a real scenario that appeals to, like, oh yeah, that's the same thing I'm doing, or that's the same issue I'm having. So yeah, obviously when it's live video we're talking about, that often means going to, you know, customers of our customers. So, you know, going and actually seeing sort of case study type places, places where the actual product's being used, and saying, like, here is what's happening in real life. This is how the product's being used, and talking to the people that are using it. But even in animation, you know, putting the product in a setting that's realistic, you know, that looks, well, yeah, that's a quick sort of cartoony representation of a lab, or, you know, a particular sort of manufacturing process or whatever.
So you've talking about going to the client site and filming and showing it. So can you share any best practices for incorporating these real world examples or case studies in videos?
Yeah, I think it's always a really good idea whenever you can. I think it can be super powerful. They're often the hardest things to organize because of how many moving parts there are. They can be quite tricky, but yeah, I think it comes back to the same thing, really. It's planning from the start. You know, who's the audience? Who are you trying to talk to? And that leads, you know, directly into what are their likely pain points? What are their problems going to be? You know, what is it? What are they likely to want the product to do for them? And then, okay, do we have, you know, do we have a case study? Is there a potential customer who's had a similar problem that we can go and talk to them about? If not, can we mock up some sketches of what that environment looks like, and can we do it in animation? Yeah. So I think just thinking through that, essentially like you would with any marketing content, you know, thinking through that process of who's the customer, who are you talking to, what problem are you trying to address for them? The same things apply. I guess just in terms of like, if you do, you know, if we go on site somewhere and actually go and film, I think the biggest thing we always try to do is just not get in the way too much. I think a lot of potential case study subjects probably say no or are difficult to organize around because they imagine it's going to be, okay, we've got to shut down the plant for like a whole day and there's going to be a whole crew of people and people setting up lights and it's going to interrupt everything. Our sort of way of working has always been to travel as light as possible and to, you know, use pretty minimal gear and, you know, simplistic approaches really to filming all these things and capturing things. Mostly, you know, natural lighting, just using whatever lighting is there and like, you know, the smallest cameras we can get away with. Just so that it's not too disruptive for these places. And in some of them, particularly talking about some of the academic customers, you know, going into like research labs, they're often pretty cramped as well. You know, there's not many research facilities and universities that have huge spacious lab facilities where you've got tons of room to set up cameras and lights and stuff. They're normally, you know, the size they need to be. So they're full of stuff, full of people, you know, they're very busy. And that is, you almost don't want to clean them up too much and sort of work, you know, change that too much because then it starts looking unrealistic. You know, anyone that's worked in that environment knows exactly what it looks like and how chaotic it is and how messy it is. Again, there's a bit of a balance of capturing that on camera without it just looking a complete mess. You know, it still needs to look professional. So it's, you know, picking some angles and stuff where you're capturing some of that busyness without it looking too just sort of completely chaotic.
Brilliant. So going to the planning stages, can you describe a bit your process from idea to execution?
Mm-hmm. So like we already started talking about, you know, the initial stage is just mapping out the aims of the video. Who's it for? What are the key points we're trying to get across? What are the problems you're trying to demonstrate that you can solve? So usually that all gets hashed out in an introductory call. Most times the client has a pretty good idea anyway of, you know, of what they're, because we're working with marketing teams. So like most of the time they know the direction they're going in and stuff. If anything has not been decided yet, then we can help them through some of that. And then the first thing we'll do is essentially sketch out like a text script, just in a Word doc. If it's going to be interview based, that will just usually just be the actual interview questions, sort of mapping out, you know, roughly what order they're going to end up in the video. Obviously with interview videos, you never really know what content you've got until you film it. So often that whole structure gets scrapped and we start again once we know what we have and we build a structure out of the actual answers we end up capturing. But it's still helpful from the outset just that everyone can see, okay, this is roughly what we need to talk about because it's going to help people with deciding who's going to speak on camera and stuff like that and just give everyone an idea of what we're working towards. And we'll also put in, again, just little text descriptions of what kind of B-roll we'd like to get. So it's like, okay, can we see the product being used in this environment? Can we need to get a wide shot of like the whole lab or whatever, you know, and just sort of outlining roughly where we're going to use those as well. So it's nothing concrete. And it all, you know, can potentially change. You know, sometimes it ends up being more or less the same. Sometimes it changes really drastically by the time you get to the end video. But it's still really useful for everyone to have that sort of rough map of what we're looking for from the outset. And then if we're doing animated video, then that's even more important, because obviously we're not filming anything, so you do actually need to decide what we're going to see in what order from that stage, basically from the beginning. So obviously those change much less, like that does literally outline what we're going to do. So yeah, that's the second stage. And then from there, basically, if we're going to go and film anything, we go and film it. You know, we sort of schedule that. That all, you know, make sure everyone's going to be there on the day and knows what they're doing and everything. We'll show up and film and capture as much material as we can. You know, it's always better to have more than you need. If we're looking for, say, a 5-minute video, we'll often record 15 to 20 minutes of interview, just so that we can make sure we've got everything covered, so that we can allow people to talk around the subject a bit as well. We're not trying to get them to memorize sound bites and deliver them perfectly, because we're not working with actors or, you know, professional voiceover people or, you know, sort of TV sales channel people. You know, like we're trying to get people who are passionate about the subject or the product or whatever we're talking about, and just get them talking enough to where they start to open up and just speak naturally. So that does take a few more minutes. Sometimes people are nervous as well. It's very natural. It's very difficult to be on camera if you don't do it a lot, or a lot of people have never done it before at all. You know, I'd say probably the majority of people we work with, probably more than half the people we work with, have never done anything on camera before. Which, yeah, it can be challenging. So we try and, you know, coach them a little bit through that, you know, get them to just relax. Again, having the, you know, fairly minimal setups helps a lot with that, because big cameras, big lights are intimidating when you're not used to them, or even if you are. yeah, we'll sort of try and get them to just loosen up and just have a conversation, and speak naturally and openly, changing questions and scrapping questions as we need to, you know, depending on what comes up and what, you know, what they need. Just get as much good material as we can. And then we take it away and edit everything, basically, and just put it together. We'll usually start out following the format that we set out in the initial script, but often that, as I say, often that changes quite dramatically once you actually hear, okay, this is what we have, this is, you know, this is the actual content that we captured. Usually there's things that pop out of like, oh, that's a really nice thing, or that would be a really good opening statement, or this little bit could stand on its own, or, you know, that will all jump out once we actually, you know, have the actual footage and start looking at what people talked about. And then, so we put together, you know, an edit of the video, and then essentially there's just a process of going back and forth a couple times with the client, just making sure they're happy with everything, that everything's been included that needs to, that there's nothing in there that they didn't like or whatever. And that everything branding wise matches what they do. That varies as well. You know, some clients have pretty strict brand guidelines. Some of them are just like, here's the logo, use it. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's it basically. So yeah, it's fairly simple. And with animated videos, again, it's a simpler process in a way. But you do have to commit more upfront. So like, as I said, the script needs to be exactly what the script is going to be from the outset. So in that case, we'll start out with that text script and text descriptions of what's going on. Sometimes we'll do sort of mood board style images for like roughly what we're going to base the sort of drawing on. And then we do a visual storyboard where we actually have still frames, but of the actual imagery that's going to be in the eventual video. And again, little review process of that with the client to make sure they're happy with how it looks, how products are represented, all that sort of stuff. And then hopefully by the time we start actually animating and actually putting the video together, it's usually from then is a fairly straightforward process, because we've hashed out everything in the earlier stages. Because once you start animating something, then having to make little changes to how stuff looks and little timings and stuff, you know, that can get very awkward and take a disproportionate amount of time to fix stuff up. You know, if you found that, oh, actually, the logo on the product was in slightly the wrong place or something, and you find that out when on the second version of the animated video, that's a real pain. If you found that out when you just made a PDF, that wouldn't be an issue because you just fix it in Illustrator and then it's good from then on.
Brilliant. Have you found that AI and the emergence of AI tools have changed your workflow much lately?
It has changed some things, yeah. I wouldn't say it's been sort of completely revolutionary. Sort of the way we work has stayed pretty much the same. But there are portions of that workflow which have been made easier. Adobe Premiere that we edit video in has automatic transcription built into it now. So for something like if we've recorded like a 25-minute interview with someone, a really good speaker who was sort of rambling about their work, combing through that material to find the really good bits, we often used to use a transcript anyway. Like we would use a transcription service and get that all written out because it's easier to scan through and sort of find the bits that are going to work and are going to work together as an initial first pass. It's usually easier to do that in text than it is by like trying to listen through that much footage and just trying to remember where everything was. So actually having that, having an automatic transcription built in to Premiere, that has made that part of the job quite a bit easier. Essentially the same thing we were doing, but it reduces steps because we don't have to wait for it to get transcribed. We don't have to sort of go back and forth between a Word doc and the Premiere sequence. Everything's synchronized and in the same app. So that does help quite a lot. It also helps quite a bit with the kind of the research, like early on, because I do have a science background, but I'm not really an expert in anything because I haven't done any actual science for like 15 years. So, when we first start a project and we're mapping out what we're going to talk about and what the main messages are going to be and who the audience is, it's quite likely that it's a subject I don't know a ton about. And being able to, putting together that first draft of the script, being able to bounce things off, an LLM, something like ChatGPT or Asthena, the one that we have that's based on ASO content, that can really speed up that process of just figuring out, okay, what are the main things people talk about? What's the terminology? Are we getting the terms right? Are we focusing on the wrong thing that's kind of taken for granted in that field? Getting that balance right of just, particularly when you're, as I was saying, if the audience is a bit more technical and you're assuming some level of understanding of the field, we kind of have to gain that level of understanding or at least pretend that we have that level of understanding when we're putting the sort of script and the content together. And so as a research tool, like with anything else, like it can be very helpful in that sense for putting together scripts for interview questions, things like that. I've not yet had an example where I can just go, write me a script for this video, and it just does it and it's perfect. Like that, it's not that good.
I thought it will be for a while.
Yeah, we might get there, but that's going to be a little while. But it definitely makes the process quicker, like being able to just put things together, summarize things. You can feed it web pages about products and say, pick out, what are the main points, reading through brochures and that sort of stuff. It can bring that process down from like hours, sometimes most of a day, just, figuring out what's going on, down to, half an hour to an hour or two, which, like I said, it helps a lot with the workflow. It doesn't drastically change the workflow. I've not seen anything yet that's been so revolutionary that it's like, oh yeah, no, we'll do that instead. We'll just work a whole different way because this tool's so good. It's all just basically, assisting with the current workflow, making it that bit smoother, that bit easier.
Brilliant. So how has your and Ace Network's expertise improved over the years? What new offerings do you bring to the table?
So probably the newest offering in terms of sort of the newest toy that we have that we can use is a multi-camera recording tool. So in the past, when we've done sort of longer form podcast webinars, that sort of thing, we have used two or three cameras so that we can record the whole thing. that basically means if we want to edit it and cut it down, you can switch between cameras when you cut instead of needing to cover up the cut with B-roll. So if it's just going to be a conversation and you're not, you know there's not going to be a lot of B-roll you can use, that's a really, really useful tool. But when we've done it in the past, it's been cumbersome. So you need more, obviously, more gear, more cameras. You also need more people to watch each camera. And it's just, it's a fairly large operation. And talking about, how our sort of expertise has evolved over the years, I think the thing we've got good at, like I talked before, is the low impact shoot. So like stuff that's easy to travel with and isn't disruptive wherever we're setting it up and is really flexible on locations. That's the thing we've sort of valued above everything else when it comes to actual recording gear. Is what's the least we can use to get a quality that we're happy with. So that's always been a bit of a sticking point with the multi-camera thing, because you really, the way we were doing it, you really need multiple people and lots of gear. Like, there's not really any way around it. But as of this year, so we tried it out at PitCon, where we recorded a bunch of podcasts for them, and those were 3-camera interviews. And we had a setup using a camera switcher that records internally. That basically we could run that whole setup with one person. So it's a lot to set up for one person. So we did have like someone else to help setting everything up. But then basically once you're rolling, once you're doing the interview, there's, you don't really need the second person. We can do it as a one man show, basically, which is really useful. I think that's going to be that's going to come in quite handy in quite a few situations where it would be really nice to have a second camera, but we only have one person, and it basically means you can monitor all the cameras from one spot and you can record them all in one spot, and they all get automatically synchronized. So it just takes out a lot of that pain of setting up multiple cameras. And it's not big either. Like the device itself is like this big, it's really small, which means it doesn't drastically impact how much gear we have to bring. So that's been really good. It certainly was a game changer at PitCon. I think it allowed us to do a level of production for the podcast that we would not otherwise be able to do. Been able to do with the size of the team we brought. So yeah, that's quite exciting.
Brilliant. And to wrap up, how do you ensure that educational scientific videos are accessible to diverse audiences, including those with different levels of knowledge?
Yeah, so that's coming back to what you talked about at the start. I think in cases where you do want the audience to be fairly broad, I think you have to be... you have to give up a little bit of sort of specificity and maybe technical correctness. I think you need to permit yourself to use metaphors and abstractions a lot of the time. I think that's a big part of it, is finding something relatable that you can use, that you can explain what's going on. So it's not necessarily about communicating exactly what's happening, but it's about, at least to start with, opening with something that makes sense to anyone. You're using some sort of abstraction. If you're talking about some chemistry that's happening on a surface at at nanometer scale, you can't open with that if you're expecting everyone to just jump in and be there with you. You've got to either abstract it back to what's the effect, what are we doing? Okay, it's some, it's a coating that's going to stop something rusting or whatever, like you make it practical. Or if you're doing some sort of animation, if you're trying to demonstrate that, you need to be flexible with making it accurate. It doesn't, you've got to be, take a little bit of artistic license to make it clear to see what's going on. And yeah, for some very technically minded people who do understand what's going on, that can be a little difficult sometimes. But it's, yeah, I think that's the key. And I think that's where we bring a lot of value sometimes, is where people who are very, very close to a product, or, you know, very deeply involved with a particular process, or, you know, a particular scientific concept, and understand it in depth, taking a step back and seeing it a different way can be really difficult. And, you know, coming up with a way to explain it can be quite hard when you're used to thinking of it in a very deep way. So where we come in as sort of generalists and people who are, you know, used to doing that sort of thing, we can understand what's going on enough to, you know, enough to get it. But we have enough distance where we can see, okay, maybe we can show it this way. Maybe we can use this as a metaphor. Maybe we can abstract this and just, you know, not show that bit. And come up with ideas for, you know, how to show these things that sometimes people that are, you know, the experts might not have thought of.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Will, for your time and expertise.
No problem.